evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, December 29, 2020. Relatives of a man killed in Sudan are demanding for justice.
For us, the question is why? Why did you follow Baha? Why did you kidnap Baha? And why did you torture Baha? And why did you kill Baha?
And Juba Hospital Administrator declines to comment on the condition of children wounded during a weekend peace concert.
That stage was overcrowded with these small guys because the media were not many. So as a result, the stage broke, and as a result, many children got injured.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some Sudanese are demanding justice for a 45-year-old man who they say died after being tortured while in detention of the Rapid Support Forces in Khartoum. Baha Eddin Nouri was reportedly kidnapped from his neighborhood in Kalakala, south of Khartoum, by men believed to be security agents on December 16. His body was found several days later in Omdurman's hospital bearing signs of torture. Hundreds of Sudanese in Kalakalat have joined his family to demand an explanation for Nour's arrest and killing. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
Muhammad Nouri, the brother of the late Baha Eddin Nouri, says security agents followed his brother around for 3 weeks before arresting him at his local coffee shop in El Kalakla Sangad neighborhood. Nouri says his family wants answers from his brother's killers.
For us, the question is why? Why did you follow Baha? Why did you kidnap Baha? And why did you torture Baha? And why did you kill Baha? So all those questions, we don't have an answer for them. And when we said why, don't just give me a reason. Give me an evidence for the reason. How genuine was the information that you have, and who investigated about the information, and he was following him 3 weeks. If you're following someone 3 weeks, and you understood that this guy is guilty, then the right process is you go to the police, you open a case, and then you bring him, right?
Nouri says his family was not notified of his brother's arrest. He says his family learned later that a security man in plain clothes stopped at the coffee place to confirm his brother's identity and made a phone call, and then 10 minutes later, more agents arrived in a car wearing plain clothes and carrying AK-47s and asked his brother to get in the car, and they drove away with him. He says his brother was an electrician who made a living by repairing electrical appliances. He says his family was surprised that security agents would target his brother.
Baha is a very simple guy. He don't have a Facebook account. He don't have Instagram account. He don't have Twitter. He don't have WhatsApp. He don't have a smartphone even. For the last 10 years, he used a very simple phone. You know, this is how we make communication. So he's a very simple guy. He have nothing to do with the politics.
Nouri says his family met with Sudan's Attorney General and demanded an independent autopsy on his brother's body to learn the exact cause of death.
Every single person who signed a paper, who did everything, who bring the information, whomever he is, he has to come to the court. He has to give us a full evidence of why he did that. And what was the result of the data analysis? What was the result of the 3 weeks? Why you took him? And then whatever they are going to say, the fact is you took him, you kidnapped him, you killed him, you are a killer. Everyone who put the finger on that, we are going to send you to the court and you are going to be penalized. But the question of why need to be answered first.
Sudan's Attorney General Tayasir al-Hibir told South Sudan in Focus his office was notified of Baha Eddin Nouri's death by a member of the Rapid Support Forces. Al-Hibir says he immediately opened an investigation based on an initial autopsy, which he did not mention torture as a cause of death. He says he ordered a second autopsy based on a request from Nouri's family, which he says proves that Nouri was murdered.
Indeed, we got the results today, and based on that, we opened a criminal case under Article 130, which is murder, because it was revealed to us that one of the reasons of death was torture or violence. and I immediately requested from the rapid support forces that those involved in the arrest and illegal detention of Nuri be stripped of their immunities and handed over to stand trial.
The spokesperson of the Rapid Support Forces, Brigadier Jamal Jumaa, released a statement Monday admitting that Nuri died after being detained by the RSF. Jumaa says the commander of the Rapid Support Forces has suspended RSF's investigation into the incident and ordered all those involved with Nuri's arrest be stripped of their immunities and handed over to the Office of Public Prosecution to face justice. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Viajo in Washington.
At least 13 people were killed and more than 30 others wounded during renewed clashes between two communities in Sudan's Darfur state. Authorities in the area say they have deployed more troops in Girdak locality to quell the tension between two communities. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Local authorities say at least 13 people were killed and 34 others from both the Falata and the Masalit were injured during Monday's fighting. The renewed tribal clashes at El Greda area, 85 kilometers south of Niala town, started over land issues. Musa Mahdi, the governor of South Darfur state, told the government-owned Sudan News Agency that he has instructed security forces to quell tensions between the two communities in his state. Governor Mahdi told Suna he has formed a local committee that is tasked with investigating the incident and arresting those involved. The renewed violence in South Darfur comes at a time when the joint UN and African Union mission in Darfur, or UNAMID, is preparing to leave the area at the end of this month. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus from Al-Fashir in North Darfur Tuesday, Mahmoud Duma, who works for the local NGO charity and development organization, says UNAMID has overstayed and the mission should have ended earlier. Duma says UNAMID has not been protecting civilians but only reporting on atrocities committed against civilians in Darfur. He says the presence of UNAMID in the area has no meaning.
The expenses of the mission were very high, and I think if these expenses are utilized for developmental projects in the area, would have helped in safe and dignified return to the ITBs and refugees to their areas.
Duma says since the armed groups signed the peace agreement with the Sudanese government in Juba in October, Darfur should be more secure. He says the mindset of communities in Darfur should now be changed into what he calls a productive community.
The local communities are supposed to cooperate with the armed groups who are now part of the government to work together to ensure security prevail across Darfur. After the recent peace agreement, citizens in Darfur should be safer because the rebels who were fighting the government are now part of the government.
Ashraf Issa, the UNAMID spokesperson, confirms the mission will be closed on Thursday, December 31st, as instructed by the UN Security Council Resolution 2559. He says the UNAMID is not in a position to stay on unless such action is approved by the UN Security Council.
As of 1st of January, UNAMID will start its drawdown, which means the repatriation of its troops, their equipment, their weapons, and their vehicles over the period of 6 months. We will not be conducting any programmatic or protection activities or patrols. We will be focusing on handing over our team sites after the repatriation of troops and so on.
Issa says over the next 6 months, UNAMID will only leave behind a small technical team to deal with clearance but will not carry out routine peacekeeping operations.
There will only be a small liquidation team which will achieve the final closure of the mission in terms of an environmental cleaning, administrative work, and so on. And that team will be a very small team to deal with these aspects of the residual administrative aspects of UNAMID. government.
UNAMID was approved by the United Nations Security Council Resolution 1769 on July 31, 2007 to bring stability to the Darfur region of Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Still in Darfur, former Sudanese diplomat Khalid Musa says the clashes are direct results of pending departure this week of the UN African Union peacekeeping mission in Darfur and the lack of preparedness by the Sudanese government to assume security responsibilities.
There is a tribal conflict that's broke out in Darfur, especially between two major tribes who are Masalit and Falata, who they used to fight over natural resources and mainly pasture for their animal and water resources. This happening during the evacuation of UNAMID, that is the UN African Union hybrid force that is responsible for maintaining security in Darfur, and the international community asked the government of Sudan to take over the regional security in Darfur. So the government, federal government, sending this troop in order to maintain security and order over there and to contain these tribal clashes, not to spill over, and to make any security chaos over there. But it is a mere consequence of the departure of UNAMID over there, and it seems that the government is not ready yet to take over maintaining the security and containing any kind of tribal and internal clashes over there in Darfur.
In that light, Ambassador, do you think it's wise that the UN peacekeeping mission there to leave? As you know, the departure date is, I think, is the 31st of December.
I think definitely it's not premature, definitely, for the UN and African hybrid forces to leave. But it seems that the government hasn't yet made the right preparation to take over responsibility of security in Darfur over there. And it seems that there is a lack of preparation for the federal government to take over the security. And I think the departure of UNAMID and the government of Sudan taking over the security should go parallel, step by step. But it seems that there is a gap, an orchestrated gap and steps between the departure of UNAMID and the government taking over security in Darfur.
I thought there was an attempt towards reconciliation. Was it between the government and the tribes or between the two tribes?
I mean, these clashes between Masalit over there in Darfur happened last October. Unfortunately, it renewed again. And there is reconciliation process definitely going on. But in this situation in Darfur right now, according to the political and security vacuum that has been witnessed in Darfur, I don't think this kind of reconciliation will take place very soon. Right now, the government interest is to stop the conflict and to contain the conflict, not to spill over to the other part of Darfur that might create further security chaos over there. But the reconciliation is not avoidable, and the armed group of Darfur, like the Sudan Revolutionary Front, like the Equality and Justice Movement led by Jibril Ibrahim, the other one led by Minni Minawi, they should get involved as soon as possible because they had strike the deal in Sudan and in Darfur. But unfortunately, they are still in Khartoum. They are still not yet being appointed to take care of responsibility in Darfur in the federal government. I think there is some kind of political gap, security gap in the federal government, a regional government in Darfur, and Juba peace agreement haven't been yet fully implemented in Darfur.
That's former Sudanese diplomat Khalid Musa speaking with my colleague James Batty. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, communities in South Sudan's Tonj village clash. Find out more after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there something about yourself that you would like to change?
Definitely not. No, because at least I know my life has been good. I've not been entertaining bad company. So to maybe to change my life, I need to start making at least new friends again.
Life is all about learning. We learn every day. So in as much as we are still breathing, there are things we need to shed off.
Currently, I would like to change my tummy. I'm growing a pot belly. So I'm exercising. I've bought an abdomen machine that's helping me to deal with it. And I want to lose weight, probably 5-8 kilos.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our health segment today, we look at the last minute dash for COVID-19 vaccines. The head of pharmaceutical company AstraZeneca is calling a new coronavirus vaccine a winning formula. The AFP's Karen Chalmers reports the vaccine is expected to be approved by the British authorities.
Chief Executive Pascal Soriot also said he believes the shot will be effective against a new variant of the virus driving a rapid surge in infections in Britain. Some have raised concern that the vaccine may not be as good as the widely distributed Pfizer formula. Some results suggest that the AstraZeneca shot is about 70% effective against coronavirus. This is in comparison to the 95% efficacy reported by Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech. Britain's government says its medicines regulator is reviewing the final data from AstraZeneca's phase 3 clinical trials. Karen Chalmers, London.
Still on COVID-19, the corona pandemic has dominated news in the year 2020, and it's no different this holiday season. Despite public health warnings not to travel, many Americans boarded planes to celebrate Christmas with their loved ones. Meanwhile, Europe is receiving its first shipment of vaccine against the coronavirus and the disease it caused. VOA's Caroline Presutti has more update.
Precious cargo arriving in many countries, carrying hope as the world delivers its first shot to end the pandemic.
At this moment, trucks with the first vaccines are on the road all over Europe, all over Germany. This vaccine is the crucial key for defeating the pandemic. It's the key for us getting back our lives.
But a new COVID-19 variant, thought to be more contagious but no more severe, surfaced in Britain. Now it has spread to other countries, including Spain.
Don't forget that the cases detected of the British strain came through the Madrid airport. Sometimes you have to remember that we have been stressing the importance of controlling the airport for the last 6 months.
It's the airport that worries American officials, too. In the week leading up to Christmas, more than a million passengers flew daily, despite warnings from medical officials who fear another spike in cases.
Pretty apprehensive. So we're masks on, everybody stay together. So we'll see how it goes. I don't know, with the new strains coming out, I don't know if this is the smartest idea.
The virus continues its march into new areas, forcing resourcefulness to reach those in need. In Thailand, officials set up a field hospital with 30 beds inside a shrimp market. Doctors hope to reach migrant workers who live isolated in areas surrounding the market. As for the economy, a global survey by the consulting firm McKinsey shows 2 out of 3 executives think their country's economies will improve in the next 6 months. Carolyn Presutti, VOA News, Washington.
From U.S., we go back to South Sudan, where a group of armed men attacked Tonj Town last week, killing one person and wounding six others. The Tonj Police Department says local armed men pursued the attackers in Madol, an area just outside Tonj Town. Local chiefs in Tonj say the attackers are believed to have come from the Tonj area. Some residents of Tonj say tensions are still high in the area. For VOA News, Daniel Maringwek reports from Juba.
Tonj Police Criminal Investigation Officer Pride Deng Mabior says armed men attacked the Tonj suburbs of Madol, Kurnyuk and Bagder on Christmas Day, killing one person and wounding six others. He says the motive behind the attack remains unknown.
On Christmas Day, 25th December, army men clashed in an area known as Madol within Tonj Town. The fighting continued from 2 to 5 p.m. evening. An old man residing in Madol who was trying to run away with his cattle was killed and six others injured.
Mabior says residents of Madol, Kurnyuk and Bagder were displaced during the fighting. He says local police did not intervene because the attackers were well armed with assault of military rifles. Daliak, the Fremont chief of Tonj community, says the attackers who are alleged to be from his community are yet to be identified. He called on authorities to send additional security forces to protect travelers crossing between the two communities.
What happened on Christmas Day was unfortunate and we all condemned it. I appeal to the head of security forces to deploy more soldiers along the roads to reduce public fear.
The chief of Madol residential area, Aturu Makok, says she ran away with her family during the fighting.
In Madol, Bagder and Kurnyok areas, people ran away and are still at the hiding places up to now. We had the fighting when we were in the church for Christmas. We could not make it to come back to our houses, and everything was looted.
Makok says a member of her community trying to go back on Saturday to collect his cattle was shot by armed men roaming in the area. Joseph Makwek Chiman, a resident of Madol, says he escaped with his family and will not return home, saying there is too much insecurity.
I have reallocated my family to another area within Tonj Town. We are still living in fear and the tension is still high. I was sleeping in my house when the fighting started outside. I came out and I saw real confrontation and exchange of gunfire, and two people were injured immediately.
Manuel Ngodage, chairperson of the Tonj South County Security Committee, says 22 cows were also stolen during the clashes.
Six people were wounded during fighting and some cattle were also raided. Only night separated fighting because it was getting darker. And in the following morning, an old man was found dead alongside the river.
Malok Akodwood, the paramount chief of the Mok community, says the Christmas attack will delay a peace initiative proposed in recent days by the local chiefs. Last week, chiefs and the head of a local group known as Galwang Leaders in Tonj South County initiated reconciliation and peaceful coexistence in the communities. But the chairperson of Tonj South County Security Committee says, despite such initiative, armed young men have ignored the call for peace. For BOA News, Daniel Marengwek in Juba.
Sudanese refugees living in Uganda's West Nile region have been warned against getting involved in Uganda's politics. This follows reports that some refugees have registered to vote in next month's election, while others having been seen campaigning for candidates in their host districts. For VOA News, Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
As aliens, refugees in Uganda are not allowed to participate in politics, either by campaigning or voting. However, there are reports that some refugees have acquired national identification cards, which will be used in the 2021 general elections. Nahori Oya Awua is the resident city commissioner in Arua in West Nile region.
The most disturbing thing is I'm receiving some rumors. The refugee youths who are in the urban center, particularly in Arua here, are being lured by their colleagues to join in the politics of this country, to go into procession, and all this unnecessary excitement because of the politics. They are now trying to either buy or lure these youths to join in the politics of this country. I want to warn the refugees that they are here for their own safety. This politics is meant for the nationals. Let them desist from that kind of behavior.
Nahori warns that the refugees found politicking will be prosecuted according to Ugandan laws.
When we shall get this information again, make sure you'll be arrested and charged. So the refugee leaders and organizations that are returned here who cater for their own people, please, you summon all your youths and tell them to stop meddling up the politics of this country.
Solomon Osakan is the West Nile region refugee desk officer. He says by participating in Uganda's politics, the refugees risk losing their status.
If we get someone who is a refugee and is registered as a refugee and is getting assistance as a refugee and is involved in politics, we deregister him, he ceases being a refugee. That is what the law provides. So that's why the commandants are there in the settlement to monitor, to check every day and to get reports and see that refugees are doing the correct thing.
Catherine Sikita, a representative of urban refugees in Arua City, confirms her fellow's involvement in Ugandan politics, which she quickly notes is illegal.
As a refugee, we are not supposed to be getting involved into political situations, like supporting any of the parties, directly going out for campaigns and wearing the t-shirts for any of these candidates that are aspiring. And if at all, out of excitement, the youth are getting themselves involved into politics, it's something that really they need to bring to an end.
Peter Lomure Anisi is a refugee leader in Rhino Camp Settlement. He has called for educating refugees regarding the law on political activity in Uganda. Refugees are not allowed to vote or to join political parties in the country.
Our children are now joining political parties in this country. It is not allowed at all. And other community leaders who are in our midst should emphasize this to their members. Parents should also talk to their children. As the community, we are not ready to go and get somebody from police or mortuary.
Uganda is host to more than 1 million refugees, mostly from South Sudan. Uganda holds its national election January 14th. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Kaya by Bob Marley.
I even touch the sky above the falling rain. I feel so good in my neighborhood, so here I come again. I got to have Kaya now.
Kaya, Kaya.
Got to have Kaya.
We've been listening to Bob Marley with the song Kaya. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, vehicles, and phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are out there in the public. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Oh, yeah.
fly and touch the sky above the falling rain. Yeah, I feel so good in my neighborhood. So here I come again. I got to have
cayenne now.